We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz, coming to you from the Theatre Royal, Norwich. We start with a cutting scene in the Uxbridge and Ruislip Leader, read by Brian Perkins.
Furious residents will be given the chance to have their say about plans to house a medical practice in their road. Protester John Austin said, "We have not been included in this, but the residents know what's best for the area. We live here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 352 days a year.
Thanks to Emma Cox of Middlesex for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Linda Smith. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Armando Iannucci. Andy, whose lack of prudence may cost us dear?
This is economics, isn't it? I hate economics. Always have done. I studied it at school. Didn't understand a word of it. When I started writing professionally on a programme called Weekending in 1976, they used to say, "I'll tell you what, Andy, you do the very funny sketch about the borrowing requirement." Economists don't understand economics. They just make that stuff up. It's like jazz. They just get up, they start, an economist starts saying something, and then another economist spots where he's going, he joins in. And before you know it, they got a whole riff going. And this week, there was what's called a pre-budget statement. And the gist of what he said was, "We're doing fantastically well, everybody. Well done. The economy is in such good health that he has to borrow a huge amount of money." That's roughly the gist of it.
He said that it's all right to borrow because it's to fund the war on terrorism. So, you know, any bank manager who's issuing you with a statement saying, we regret to inform you are overdrawn, all you have to say is, it's to fund the war on terrorism.
You're so terribly simple-minded about this. I mean, economics, and the statement seemed to be very straightforward. It wasn't about funding the war on terrorism. It's about giving every baby in the country £50. And if every baby in the country has £50, by the time it's 73, it will have enough top-up fees to go to university.
But kids grow up fast these days, don't they? I mean,
they probably look and go, 50 quid? What kind of rubbish trainers am I meant to get with that?
Chancellor Gordon Brown has defended his decision to borrow an extra £10 billion, but how else can he afford a one-bedroom flat in Islington? Linda, why are doctors' receptionists logged off about changes to the NHS?
Oh, I think this is about changes to the NHS. John Reid, the minister responsible for this, I believe.
He is.
Sort of Scottish, but in a more Irving Welsh sort of way. Gordon Brown, you know, none of that, you'll no be laughing when you're dead business.
Careful.
Oh, well, I beg your pardon. That would be less scary if you weren't wearing a flashing Santa hat.
It's part of devolving power to the people in health issues, so that we're going to be allowed to choose which disease we have and how long we've got and how deep we want to be buried. And
And also all our records are going to go on the internet, so people can sort of look up Pamela Anderson and give her your disease, you know, something like that.
Not mine. Pamela Anderson doesn't get up 15 times in a night, I can tell you.
Well,
at least not for that.
There was a fantastically cryptic statement by, I think it was John Reid. He said, you know, terminally ill patients will be given a choice. You think, well, I know what they're going to say, I don't want to die. Aren't they?
Actually, I must admit, when I was in hospital, I could have done with a choice over what to wear, actually. Because they give you those awful, these sort of hospital gown things, and they could definitely save a few quid by not getting Vivian Westwood to design them. I think it must be her, because they look a state from the front and show your arse at the back.
Don't think choice is better anywhere else. I flew back from St. Petersburg last week on Aeroflot, and we're in the air about half an hour, and this brick-faced air stewardess came up to me and said, "Would you like dinner?" And I said, "What's the choice?" And she said, "Yes or no."
By 2005, NHS patients will be able to check their medical records on the internet. In fact, the government has unveiled a raft of measures to increase choice in the NHS. It's known as a raft because the good ship NHS was torpedoed by Admiral von Thatcher's privatisation U-boats and finished off by Emperor Blair's Foundation Trust Kamikaze Squadron. So, I'll give one point to Linda for staggering vaguely towards the answer and one to Armando for knowing what it was.
Can I just say, I think that given that the four panellists are sitting here in sparkly, flashing Santa Claus hats...
Could I just add that Andy actually brought his with him?
I think there's danger of us losing our credibility as a satirical news quiz.
Armando, who doesn't want to belong to any club that won't accept him as a member?
This is Robert Mugabe, who's pulling out the Commonwealth Games. Robert Mugabe, old friend, gets into power, locks up his opponents, bans newspapers, rigs the election. But that's Vladimir Putin, and Blair likes him, so we're not going to do anything about him. Mugabe has expelled himself from the Commonwealth, and Blair is retaliating and going to bring him to his knees by threatening to withdraw his knighthood. It's a powerful weapon.
I wonder what his knighthood was given to him for.
It was services to Anglo-African relations.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. I'm quietly confident that's what it was.
I just got the image of the ceremony, you know, with a lollipop lady getting and a charity worker and Robert Mugabe.
The Queen takes out a sword and he just goes for her.
Zimbabwe has withdrawn from membership of the Commonwealth after its members resolved to extend sanctions against Mugabe's government for continuing to violate democratic values. The Commonwealth is an alliance of disparate nations, linked only by a shared colonial past and the lingering amazement that a nice woman like the Queen should be married to Prince Philip.
I just remember those scenes of the England rugby team getting there, sitting down with the Queen, because I got into some trouble a couple of weeks ago by saying that rugby was a menacing, disgusting, vile, violent game. So the English rugby team go and visit the Queen. 2 days later, she's in hospital with a torn ligament. I rest my case.
Alan, listen to this.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you.
Alan, why don't our 11-year-olds know much about much?
1 week we're going to get this German cannibal. I don't know what music you're going to play, but I'm going to be so happy. I don't know how to answer this question because we have an enormous, delightful audience, about 5,000. It's like being in a Nuremberg rally. Primary school teachers are letting down their little charges, or letting off their little charges. I don't think it's that bad. I mean, they'll only get to universities that aren't any good, and we'll charge them too much for going there, I think. Everybody should just farm. I knew I'd eventually commend myself to East Anglia. I think that's my answer.
Can I just stick up for primary school teachers? Because I sort of feel these inspections. Thank you. Yes. All the primary school teachers in the upper circle. I just feel they're given, you know, in the old days, primary school teachers were inspected once every 5 years. Now they're inspected every 3 months. And I think primary school teachers, when they come home, they shouldn't have to mark homework. They should be allowed to play. Should be able to run outside and go on swings. It's awful what we're doing to them.
Charles Clark, the Secretary for Education, he did that classic thing of turning the word fail into an active verb, which was becoming more and more prevalent. You know, the teachers are failing children. You know, he needs to get his own grammar into to some kind of order before he starts laying down the law about education.
I should warn you, Andy, that you were rude about Charles Clark. He is a local MP and you may have caused a lot of offence.
Is he your MP?
Yes.
Or possibly
does
not.
Does he live near here?
Yes.
Do you want to go around there afterwards?
He's behind
you, Harry. If primary school teachers graffitied his house, it would be in that really nice, neat writing list.
So hands up all the primary school teachers in the audience. Because I can hear the elbow patches swishing.
latest Ofsted report by Chief Inspector of Schools David Bell claims that nearly half the teaching in English primary schools is not good enough. Government hope to improve teaching standards with performance-related pay. To qualify, teachers have to take on extra duties. Biology teachers give sex education lessons, maths teachers must help with the school accounting, and PE teachers will be required to learn to read and write. None of them in the audience, anyway. We start round two with a classified notice from Ad Trader magazine.
Buoyancy aid, but tatty, but better than nothing, £10.
Many thanks to Chris Blott for sending that in. Andy, for whom does the road toll?
Well, this is the new system. Basically, for motorists have two choices. They can either sit in stationary traffic, or they can choose to pay, as I understand it, the charges are going to continue to go up if the project is successful. It's very elitist. And as I understand it, we could easily be in a situation 2 years from now where to go up the A11 for 10 miles could cost you £8,000. But for that, you get exclusive use of the road, personal valet service at the other end, you know, and sexual favours from the Minister for Transport of the day. It's a two-track system. People who pay get a motorway, the rest of us just get two tracks just to drive on.
Yeah, so well, at the moment, you can pay £2 to avoid going to Birmingham, which sounds like a bargain. No farming Birmingham school teachers in the audience, I hope.
The new M6 Expressway, Britain's new toll road on the outskirts of Birmingham. It's the quickest way out of Birmingham. Well, the quickest way that has nothing to do with drinking insecticide. Linda, which scaredy rats will be shy of living a long life?
If you're a rat, right?
Yeah.
And you're, I don't know, just sort of a, not a very outgoing rat, yeah. You know.
You bottle it up and you die.
You bottle it up. You're a bit of a loner. You know, spend a lot of time on your own, never really mix with other rats.
And the same applies to humans. If you're shy and you don't like to trouble people and you don't mention the fact that blood's pouring out of every orifice, then you die. And that death is directly... More deaths are caused by shyness, statistically, than anything else.
I don't know how you tell a gregarious rat from a shy one. Because their main sort of thrust in life seems to be eating rubbish, doesn't it, really? So maybe that's what's killing them, you know? The poor diet.
I remember what it was. It was... What they discovered was that the rats who live longest are the natural risk takers.
I have my suspicions about these scientists and their white coats and their obsession with observing the behaviour of mice and rats. I think they're up to something.
It's a frightening thought, a confident rat, isn't it?
A confident rat.
A rat that feels good about itself.
This time next year we'll have rats that want to invade Poland.
Because they're worth it. I just love the idea of these little shy Alan Bennett mice going, well, I have my main meal of a lunchtime.
Scientists at the University of Chicago have discovered that shy rats don't live as long as their bolder counterparts. Research has shown that timidity and shyness can shorten one's lifespan, which leads us to the terrifying conclusion that Neil and Christine Hamilton may be immortal. Amanda, listen to this. Armando, why will new citizens of Britain be required to take a stand?
Right. National anthem. A new ruling from David Blunkett and the Home Office. Or Mordor, as...
I
which is people taking British citizenship will have to, at the ceremony, have to stand and sing the national anthem, which I think is a ploy to put people off taking up British citizenship, because, I don't know, maybe this is a personal thing, but our national anthem is rubbish. It's just depressing. I mean, I always feel like at these...
Your Scottish one's quite nice, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's all hee-hoo-hoo. You know, it's at sporting occasions, you're always quite impressed by how jolly everyone else is. National anthem. I'm so glad to be from Chad and all that.
Armando, are you sure you're a real Scot? Because I don't think the Scottish national anthem is hee ho ho.
I was translating.
All right.
Prospective citizens will have to attend a ceremony where they sing the national anthem. They're shown photos of rain and and to tell them what it's like going to the seaside. They'll have to strip to their underpants, stand in sand, and be hosed down by water at minus 10 degrees centigrade, while from loudspeakers all around them, the sound of screaming children will be played to them.
I think if we want to get a decent national anthem, we've got to become a fascist country, haven't we? All the most unpleasant countries have the nicest anthems.
That is the plan.
David Blunkett wants citizenship ceremonies to involve a salute to the Union flag, swearing allegiance to the Queen, and to end with the singing of God Save the Queen. Mr Blair is also very keen to see British citizens saluting the grand old red, white and blue. A tear comes to his eyes whenever he sees the stars and stripes flying. Alan, how is the appliance of science stuffed Christmas turkeys?
Whenever you open a rubbish paper like the Daily Mail and you see a smirking bloke in a beard in front of a blackboard with 40,000 equations, you know he's discovered the secret of snot or something. This man has spent all his time with nothing to do, and he's discovered how you can cook a turkey. And he's discovered a formula for cooking a turkey. It is incomprehensible. So it's no use to anybody. While we're on it, tangentially on this subject, there is nothing that irritates me more about Christmas journalism than the stuff that starts about August saying how to do the Christmas lunch. It is a big bird. You get the oven hot and you put it in and it goes brown. In a pot, you take about 400 sprouts. You amputate their arses and they go green. Then you have potatoes. A pudding comes round on a truck from Waitrose, and everybody gets pissed. Now, that is not so difficult that you actually need a man sitting down at MIT and saying 48 of us in white coats have come up with this formula. It's easier than doing boiled eggs for breakfast, but, you know, every newspaper says this is Nigella's, or, forgive me, Delia's, a woman... great supporter of Carrow Road and all that it stands for, but, I mean, really...
I'd love to have Delia's Christmas a month in the Bahamas, I believe.
A university physicist claims to have produced the optimum formula for cooking the perfect Christmas turkey. It's known as the "have you ever been to a harvester before" theory.
Just mentioning pointless academic research, it just reminds me that last year, several of us got into a lot of trouble with the citizens of Norwich, well, with the mayor of Norwich, during the transmission of I'm Alan Partridge, because the mayor thought that it denigrated the town. Or city, sorry!
Because it's lots of villages joined together.
I know my way around here. But and there was a story, while the series was going out, from... you'll like this, Andy, an economics academic at East Anglia University, who said he'd calculated that Alan Partridge had caused more economic downturn to the city of Norwich than a major terrorist attack.
Before we start the final round, here's a notice from the West Drayton Historian newsletter.
29th of September, 1900. A meeting of the parish council was held on Monday evening at the National School. Messrs. Humbert, Stroud, Crabb, Hardy and Paynes attended. The business was of an unimportant nature and of no general interest.
Thanks to Valerie Weeks for that. Andy, listen to this.
Humpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again.
Eminem. In his mellow face.
Andy, who thinks Humpty Dumpty isn't all he's cracked up to be?
Well, this story, as I understand it, is not a sort of bona fide news story in the sense that it's a satirical skit. They were students or academics. They did a sort of funny analysis of how all the nursery rhymes aren't health and safety conscious, basically. So that Humpty Dumpty, you know, he shouldn't have been able to fall off that wall if there'd been a proper risk assessment. And also, you know, if he hadn't been an egg. And, I mean, all
I think there's two dead blokes inside that elephant. I've noticed a bit of a funny waft coming from...
We should explain, perhaps, the listeners at home,
not
that for reasons that we do not understand, here in Norwich at the Theatre Royal, there is quite a large soft fabric elephant behind Alan Corrin.
I thought Alan had won it at bingo.
Canadian doctor Sarah Giles and Sarah Shea have attacked nursery rhymes such as Humpty Dumpty, Jack and Jill and Rockabye Baby for showing a cynical disregard for proper medical treatment. The doctors deduced that Humpty Dumpty had suffered a spinal injury, Solomon Grundy suffered from hormone-related accelerated growth syndrome. And I can't tell you what they think happened to the cock on the woodpile blowing his horn. Linda, why was two Jags barking up the wrong treehouse?
This is two Jags, John Prescott. It's not really him, is it? It's a man who'd built a treehouse in his mother's garden for his little girl. And the neighbours complained about it. They said it was a monstrosity and that it was frightening their children. I don't know, children with shed-related anxiety, obviously.
I thought it looked like the house in Psycho.
Did you? Did you, it frightened you?
Yes.
Did it? Oh, well, perhaps I'm made of sterner stuff and... I've seen sheds in my time, some of them with two coats of creosote, and I've not flinched. But anyway, the neighbours complained about it, said it was frightening their kids. So the man who built it wrote to John Prescott, who is known to have the wisdom of Solomon, to adjudicate in this matter. And in the end, it was actually pulled down because it didn't have planning permission. But what got me was this man's mother. This man's mother said it was rubbish. He is useless. I've kept all his school reports for woodwork where they say he's polite, but useless. You'd just love to be round there at Christmas, wouldn't you? Carve that turkey, Colin. It'll be rubbish.
Daniel Bennett of Glossop, Derbyshire, was ordered to demolish his daughter's treehouse this week, despite calling on John Prescott to intervene on his behalf. Treehouse disputes such as this are one of Prescott's key responsibilities, along with taking the videos back to Blockbusters, booking the Downing Street window cleaner, and making sure Tony hasn't got any toilet paper stuck to his shoe. Alan, how has going off the rails about a railway kept one man on track?
It's about a railway.
It is.
What? Can you hold on a second? There's a brain pulling in.
There's a guy who... I don't know if... Should I whisper to you through the microphone?
It doesn't matter.
There's a guy who lives in a tiny, tiny dot on the map called Breech between Glasgow and Edinburgh.
That's fantastic. That's fascinating.
And he's the only guy at this railway station.
Stone me.
And he's managed to persuade the Strategic Rail Authority to stop the train for him.
Well, I never...
And keep the station open. Just for him.
That's what it is.
And they worked out that it costs them like £300,000 to keep this station open all year. So it'd be cheaper to just give him his own taxi, really, or even a hovercraft, or Concorde, or something.
Who is this man? He's either got the most phenomenal powers of persuasion, or he's Tony Blair's illegitimate son, isn't he?
I think he has photographs of members of the Strategic Rail Authority in compromising positions.
Scottish commuter Jim Warnock has won his struggle with the Strategic Rail Authority to keep his local station open, even though he's the only customer who uses it. Reek Station is so underused, the West Lothian Council has been forced to sponsor local youths to vandalise it. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
This is from the Evening Standard. Vasectomy delays tube commuters. Tube bosses have launched an investigation after a vasectomy delayed thousands of passengers. A trainee driver fainted as two colleagues discussed the particularly grisly details of the operation one of them had undergone. The trainee, just 1 week into his practical instruction, is thought to have been sick after his instructor and a driver, both older men, ignored his request for a less intimate topic of conversation.
Ah, oh, nice local one from the Eastern Daily Press. Thanks. Yes. Thanks to Bill Woolnought for this one. It's an advert. Felbrigg Hall Farm turkeys, bronze, white, open-air reared, GM-free fed, and very happy so far.
Armando.
This is an email sent in from the British Harpsichord Society, who found this cutting the Southern Daily Echo. When a well-meaning member of the public believed they'd spotted a horse stuck in the mud in a Hampshire field, the quick-thinking person rang for emergency help. The 999 call sparked a mercy dash by fire crews from Redbridge in Southampton. But when firefighters arrived and approached the creature after scaling a wire fence with ladders, it simply wandered off. The animal was, in fact, a Shetland pony known for their short legs.
It's from the Luton Evening Post. It says, James Furman begged the Luton Magistrates Court to give him his driving licence back so that he can start a family.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final scores. Andy and Linda have 15 points. Armando and Alan, this week's winners, were 17. And before we leave you, here's an item from the Radio Times.
1:40, the Rockford Files. Jim Rockford gets to the bottom of a wealthy client's future son-in-law.
Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Linda Smith, Amanda Iannucci and Alan Carr. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Simon Littlefield, George Poles, Lucy Clark, and the producer was Simon Nichols.